It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. New data from the company FICO shows that national average credit scores dropped for the second consecutive year and at the quickest pace since the Great Recession.
The report finds that Gen Z borrowers experienced the sharpest average credit score drop of any age group. FICO found that an increasing share of borrowers are behind on credit card, car, and personal loans.
However, credit scores do remain higher than they were during the Great Recession. And not all borrowers are feeling the pinch, as some consumers are benefiting from all-time highs in the stock market and rising home values.
Jay Michael Collins joins us for a look at what these numbers mean for consumers in Wisconsin. He's a professor of public affairs and human ecology at UW-Madison. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
We've got this report from FICO finding a national average credit score going down for the second year in a row, biggest drop since the Great Recession. What do you see behind that decline in our average creditworthiness?
Yeah, I mean, we still have COVID, right? So I think that's part of what we're seeing is that there was this huge shock, really, to all households and you know, everybody's credit around COVID. And so initially that was pretty negative. And then coming out of COVID, there were lots of subsidies and many creditors actually gave some reprieve for borrowers. And so that shock is really kind of still rippling through what we see in the credit reports and the credit histories, which FICO uses to compose their credit scores. And, you know, especially we're seeing the end of the student loan hiatus on payments. And so I think that's what's driving a lot of this.
With our next guest, we're going to dig into what FICO means for us as individuals. What does it mean to you as an economic indicator, right? As one of the various tea leaves we can read on how people are doing in our economy.
You know, we care a lot about credit. I mean, those of us who went through the 2008 recession know how devastating consumer credit can be for the overall economy. In that case, it was mortgage debt. But we worry about households really getting in over their skis, so to speak, where they cannot keep up with their debt loads. And so in many ways, what the FICO score does is it's a combination of how much we're using debt, how reliant we are on debt, and then also how good we are at repaying that collectively. And those scores are just a way for, you know, particularly lenders to sum up what that behavior looks like. And, you know, it does provide a general indicator of where things are at. I have to say, though, scores are still quite high. Mm-hmm. So we have concerns, but, you know, relative to the grand scope of the last 20 years, they do actually look pretty good.
As people dig into the numbers, and if I understand it correctly, this isn't, okay, we've gone down a couple points because everybody has gone down a couple points. We have a little bit of hollowing out of the middle and a split where some people are doing fine and their FICO scores are going up. And then we've got a chunk of the population where they're going down a little more. What do you make of that? How significant is that, especially for those people who are seeing the scores go down?
Yeah, I mean, if you're experiencing them going down, you're aware of this, and you know you probably are doing everything you can to avoid it. But you know, it's a combination of not being able to keep up with payments and taking out an increasing amount of debt. Those are kind of the big drivers of this. You know, I think it tells us that they're definitely. I think the report itself describes this sort of K shape in terms of what the economy looks like. But for people who are, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, who have some debt, who don't have any emergency savings and don't have a lot of cushion, it really is a pretty delicate balance trying to keep up with payments. You know, occasionally letting some things slide here and there. It's really just doing the best you can. And they, you know, probably don't have a lot of other options in that case. And so I think that's what we're seeing for, you know, especially for low wage workers, for people who have unstable hours, and just, you know, trying to keep up with those payments becomes a little bit too much.
Some of the analysis I've seen says, hey, this is mainly a concern among younger adults, Generation Z, the Gen Alpha, if that's what we're calling them, as they start to come out of school. What are you seeing for younger people in particular?
For sure, we have the most concerns about that, say, 18 to 29, under 30 age group. But that said, we always have a concern about that age group. So they're always the group that is the, you know, most likely to miss an auto loan, for example, or the most likely to miss a credit card loan, for example. So it's always a group that struggles with their credit. It's part of being a young adult and adjusting to, you know, the adulting of managing credit. Also, they're just more likely to have instability in their employment. They're trying to juggle maybe starting a family or going to school. And so all those things make it a riskier population. I think what's different now is the role of student debt. And the report brings this out that, you know, this is a group that has more student debt, and particularly because, again, of the pandemic and what we saw in that sort of shock to student loans, where they weren't due for a while, then they were due, and then there's this long on-ramp of when they're due and how they're due, ton of confusion that people have about how to manage these. And so I think that student loan debt just adds another wrinkle that's especially important for that under 30 age group.
I'm not sure how the timing of this would correlate to this FICO report. We're seeing concerns in recent months now for those younger workers that employers are sitting tight on hiring. They're maybe not laying a lot of people off. They're not hiring new people. And that's kind of leading to a stall in the labor market for new college graduates, even in some cases for new high school graduates. What do you watch for that younger workforce as they're trying to get established and, you know, hopefully pay these bills regularly?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly right. So there is some stagnation in hiring. I think it also trickles to those people in their even mid-20s who are employed but would like to jump to the next job, maybe a better paying job, maybe get a promotion. Those aren't happening either. So it's not just on the entry to the labor market. It's also movement within the labor market. There's just not a lot of opportunities to, you know, interview for a different job to perhaps get a raise. And so all of that creates a lot of pressure. Meanwhile, there's been no reprieve on what the cost of housing are, for example, or for the other costs that people face.
You mentioned earlier, yes, these FICO scores have gone down for a couple of years, but in the scope of things, they're pretty good. I don't want to be a negative media guy and only focus on that bad news. What led these credit scores to be up at a pretty good level in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, let's say, going back to the Great Recession. So in the Great Recession, all credit really was not looking good. I mean, from 2008 to 2013 was a pretty rough period for delinquencies and, you know, for people being able to take out debt. So, you know, that was really a long recovery coming out of the Great Recession. And just before the pandemic, people were actually doing pretty well. And then the pandemic, you know, really a lot of people used the, if they were in pretty good shape in terms of their employment, they were able to use the pandemic and use some of these reprieves from payments to catch up, to pay off some debt, to build some savings. And the result, people have come out of the, you know, the average consumer has come out of the pandemic with pretty good balance sheets, pretty good credit, but now that's wearing off. And so I think what we're seeing now is back to a normalization of the, you know, or 2017, 18, 19 kind of period, kind of going back to that, but, you know, still trying to recover from the shock, especially on the student loan side.
You mentioned delinquency, and a FICO analyst in this report noted, I'm going to quote a little bit here, bear with me, delinquency rates on auto loans, credit cards, and personal loans are at or near their highest levels since 2009 during the Great Recession and are more consistent with an economy in recession than one still in expansion. That's the end of the quote here. Delinquency rates on loans, how worried should we be about that if this is at a larger scale since we've seen since the Great Recession?
Yeah, honestly, that's the thing to focus the most on, even more than the FICO scores themselves, is the delinquencies. You know, if you look at the delinquency rate for student loans, it's just like, you know, they call it a hockey stick. It's just straight up, right? And so there's a real shock that people are facing in managing their credit. I mean, we're not seeing anything close to the worrying levels of mortgage delinquencies that we saw back in 2008, but the credit card delinquencies are getting soft. The auto loan delinquencies, I think there's some worries to be had. And, you know, maybe you don't have any of these loans, so you say, well, it doesn't affect me. It might affect your financial institution. You know, it might affect the ability of a lender who wants to make, who maybe doesn't want to make that next loan to you because they don't want to take that risk. So it does affect all of us, even if we're not currently in these credit markets.
One of the things going on in 2008 before the Great Recession is Americans were pretty over-leveraged with debt, whether we're talking about a lot of our financial and investment and mortgage companies to people who had been encouraged to take out loans, buy more property, you're going to make money on it. Do you have a sense that we have too much loan debt that might leave the economy as a whole vulnerable?
I think if you ask, you know, four different economists, you'll get four different opinions on what too much debt is. It's challenging. I think, you know, sometimes there is this reference to sort of good debt and bad debt. You know, good debt is to buy a mortgage or a mortgage to buy a house, and bad debt is a credit card. You know, the reality is people are just doing the best they can, trying to juggle their income and expenses, trying to smooth out whatever their needs are over time. And so, you know, obviously when people borrowed more than their homes were worth during the Great Recession, that was really bad. I don't think we're quite seeing that now. Even on auto loans, people who are buying used auto loans and maybe worried about the fact that the car is not worth what the loan is, it's a pretty small share of the overall market. So, you know, we obviously have to watch the student loan market really carefully and watch credit cards really carefully, but it doesn't seem to me quite at the level of we saw, say, 15 years ago.
Michael, thanks so much for joining us today.
Appreciate it.
J. Michael Collins is a professor of public affairs and human ecology at UW-Madison. For more on what people can do if they take a ding to their credit scores, we've got Preston Cherry with us, assistant professor of finance and personal financial planning at UW-Green Bay, director there of the Charles Schwab Center for Personal Financial Planning, founder and president of Concurrent Financial Planning, author of the book Wealth in the Key of Life. Preston, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. First of all, how concerned should people be about their FICO scores?
They should be concerned. You know, you don't need, people always say, well, credit scores are not needed anymore. And I don't think that's true, because you need credit, and you don't need credit until you need it. You can't save enough assets. You can't save enough assets out of credit until you need it. And what do I mean by that? Well, until you're like 50 or 60, and then you have these wealth of portfolio assets to where you don't have to borrow anymore, well, then you may not need credit. And even at that, these business owners, they still have to borrow to fund their businesses. You may have a second vacation home that you need. So wherever you are in your life phase, access to credit is still important. So credit scores are very important no matter where you are in your life stage.
And my credit score could impact whether I get a loan, right? But in some cases, as I understand it, it could affect the interest rate I pay on the loan. So a lower FICO score, even if I can get credit, might cost me money over time. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. The cost of capital is very important. I share with the young folks that I teach all the time is that the classes that they take at the university, particularly personal finance, will pay for itself tremendously over their lifetime. And what do I mean? Well, if you abuse your credit very early, well, the cost of access to credit will cost you so much over time that you could be taking money away from yourself for retirement or the lifestyle that you want to live, because the auto rate that you're trying to get, it can be right now they're in the sevens. It could be 10. The home rate that you're trying to get, it's 6% right now. It could turn into 8, 9, or 10. And that could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars over a lifetime. And we already have a shortcoming of retirement preparedness across all generations. So if your cost of credit is high, it's taken away from lifestyles and also retirement preparedness.
Now, in this FICO report that started this conversation, they mentioned they're seeing some borrowers prioritizing different pieces of their debt. If they've got, say, car loans, student loans, auto loans, house loans, whatever, doing kind of a triage. So for that person out there, they've got different types of debt. They can't afford, obviously, to pay them all down. Maybe they can keep minimum payments on a couple, but they could start chipping away at one. What do you recommend prioritizing if they're in that situation?
Well, there's many ways to do it. I mean, we've heard about the snowball effect, where you are attacking the most high interest debt that you have and then attacking that one with all your might and then paying the minimums on the rest. And then once you pay down or pay off one, then you attack the next high interest one while paying the minimums and keeping on repeating that pattern. You can also take the smallest debt that you have and pay that off quick. And that way you can take that amount that you have and apply that one to perhaps the next smallest one. So you can take a bottom-up approach and use the principal's amounts that you pay off quickly and use to the next one, or you can use that snowball effect and use that that high interest approach and pay the minimums on the rest. So those are two ways to address it. I will say this, paying off your debt and then not addressing savings, your savings and investing, that's not one way to go. Because some folks say, okay, just power down and pay off debt and then don't do any saving and investing during that time. And I don't really subscribe to that one. I think you should still save for retirement or do some future-based savings while you're paying down your debt.
That's interesting, because I think it's easy for people to look at this debt they owe right now, right? And that's occupying all their brain space when it comes to money. How can they, in that situation, start setting aside even a little bit for a Roth IRA or what have you?
Well, and I don't like the word should, too. I know I just put that out there. But it's more psychological, too, because I would say I want to affirm folks' emotions, because the psychology of money is very important, because debt can be very worry-driven, anxiety-driven, and also maybe have some guilt, some regret, and some shame. So folks, it's preference based. So folks want to say, okay, I don't want any debt anymore. So they want to just power down and go ahead and pay that down. And that's fine, actually. So if they want to take that approach, that's fine, because that's a preference. That said, if you have some bandwidth in your budget, then say, for example, a 401k, you have a match program in your 401k more than likely. So your place of employment is giving you a match on your money, and it's quote unquote free money. And I like to say that's not free money. That's actually your money that you're leaving on the table. Right. So at the very minimum, contribute enough to the 401k to where you're receiving your match, and then still simultaneously go aggressive on your debt payment.
Now, for FICO scores, if people are worried, hey, my score is low, that might hurt me down the road, give us a behavior that's going to help that score. Give us a behavior that's going to hurt that score, please.
Well, I think automation is one behavior that you can subscribe to, which is, if you don't see it, then you can't spend it. And automating an amount to where you are, well, one, prioritize the debt repayment. And that means, you know, admitting that there is an issue that you need to address. Avoidance is the compounding effect, and it's only going to get worse. And I know that it's hard to admit sometimes that there is a problem, and putting the head in the sand may seem that it's just simply going to go away, or that you don't have to deal with it. It's only going to make the problem worse. So admitting, number one, that's a behavioral aspect. Number two, taking some action and automating the process, and say, put a timeline and amount to the issue, and then automate that over time. Say, I want to be out of debt on this particular credit card, for example, in 18 or 24 months. What amount does that take? And then automate that. And that way you have a mental and also an emotional aspect and a financial number to know when that debt is going to be reduced.
We'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Preston Cherry is an assistant professor of finance and director of the Charles Schwab Center for Personal Financial Planning at UW Green Bay, and founder and president of Concurrent Financial Planning. He offers advice on YouTube and elsewhere under the username Dr. Preston Cherry. We also heard from J. Michael Collins, professor of public affairs and human ecology at UW-Madison, been talking about our personal finances as a credit score report from FICO, as in the FICO score, says, hey, our numbers have gone down, particularly for younger Americans.